We've got an adjusted loss in the first quarter per share of $1.33. The estimated loss that we were expecting here, 82 cents. So that's a significantly wider loss than we were expecting.
It seems like, this is like the classic story stock with Tesla. None of these numbers really seem to matter. It's all about whether the story is intact with them and whether people still believe in Elon.
And they do.
It's a very good build right now. The premiums are going to come down very substantially. The deductibles are going to come down. It's going to be fantastic health care. Right now, Obamacare is failing. We have a failing health care.
Early voting kicking off South Korea's snap presidential election on Thursday, the first of an expected near-record turnout when general polls open next week. Polls show Koreans in their 20s will turn out in force for Liberal Moon, energized by a half year of massive protests that led to the impeachment of conservative President Park Geun-hye.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's May 5th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots to cover this morning. We'll bring in Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management momentarily for our regular Friday portfolio and economy talk. A little bit later in the show, we'll bring in Rick Sini, as we do every Friday, to talk about aviation and travel. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk for this Friday. Dow futures, actually all of the futures seem to be flat this morning, perhaps waiting on the big jobs report later this morning. Dow futures off 13. S&P and NASDAQ futures up just a fraction this morning. Crude oil futures at $45.45 a barrel, which is just a little bit lower. European markets are generally lower today. The FTSE, the only of them higher this morning. In Asia, markets are generally mixed as well. As we, again, head to the opening bell this morning, Dow futures flat off about 12 points. In this country, you heard in the opening montage the big healthcare vote yesterday. I bet you didn't know that this Republican healthcare plan could target a key protection for those of you who get your health insurance through work. It would allow health insurance companies to impose lifetime and annual caps on benefits for those who get coverage through a large employer plan. Former President Obama's healthcare overhaul banned users from imposing such caps, and public opinion surveys have shown that prohibition was popular. Before the Obama reforms, people who got serious medical problems could be cut off of their health coverage once they hit their insurance limit. They sometimes went into debt to continue their treatment. The health care bill planned yesterday moves on to the Senate, where many in the Senate say they will rewrite it or come up with their own. Not much support for it in the Senate. Another story we're following, Delta Airlines is offering refunds and compensation to California family members that say they were forced off a plane and threatened with jail time after refusing to give up one of their seats. A video of the April 23rd incident was uploaded to YouTube earlier this week, added to the list of recent encounters on airlines, adding to United and Delta and Americans' problems in that area. Also, House Republicans took a major step toward their long-promised goal of unwinding strict financial rules created after the 2008 crisis, pushing forward sweeping legislation that would undo much of the Dodd-Frank law. As I mentioned at the open, the big jobs report is coming today. And Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management here today. He's a senior portfolio manager there. Talks to us every Friday about portfolios. Good morning, Paul. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be here again.
I'm glad to have you in. We're both wearing our spring shirts this morning.
We're going to try to make it warm here no matter what.
I'm a firm believer that if you dress for the occasion, the weather will change. It's not really happened in my lifetime, but I'm a firm believer.
We're working on it.
So the jobs report, everybody's thinking about that this morning. Obviously, the markets have maybe hit pause there, it looks like. What are you thinking?
Well, the jobs report last month was much lower than expectations. We're going to probably see something between 150 and 175, maybe even a little bit north of that, reversing a little bit of the weakness that we saw last month. Again, the key is going to be wage growth. Are we making more money? And that's really the grease that makes the economy run. So wage growth for us is going to be really the important number to be watching.
Seen a couple of estimates looking for maybe 2.5%.
Yeah, about 2. And unfortunately, that's about where we've been for a long time now. And it's really been at the low end of the historical range. We've talked about it on Jobs Days. We're between 2 and 4% historically, so 2, 2.5%. up significantly from where we were in 2009 and into 2011, where we were essentially zero, but from a historical perspective, still on a very, very low side.
What do you think the reaction is going to be if we see another instance like last month where it's way lower than everybody thought or way higher?
You know, there's a pretty large margin of error. So I think if we're below 100, we could see Treasuries rally pretty strongly. We might see the markets come off a little bit, and that will put into question what does the Fed do in June. After the Fed meeting this week, the expectations for a rate hike in June went from about 70% to 95%. So the Fed is still pretty much feeling that we're on board for two rate hikes this year, and you know we're still talking about cutting back their overall balance sheet. So all those are still on the table, but it's going to take a very weak jobs number to put that into question.
We saw some numbers leading up to today, the ADP payrolls report, 177,000 jobs. That's some good news there.
It is. And but the problem with ADP is it hasn't been around very long, so that those correlations between what the ADP numbers are and what the jobs numbers are not as tight as we'd like them to be. We need probably another 3-4 years worth of data to make that correlation. But generally speaking, the ADP number was a little bit stronger in last month, so at least directionally, we should be a little bit stronger this morning.
Seeing indications that in a lot of places around the country, the job market is so tight that employers are having to add more perks to their benefits packages. I saw one company that's adding a 3-day weekend a couple times a month, some other things. Is that a sign of how tight the market is?
It is, but here too, it depends on what part of the market we're interested in. Are you looking at the entry level positions? Are you looking at those that require college education or more technical in nature? So there's a divide, if you will, between the experience and knowledge jobs and more of the entry level jobs. But you're right, for those types of jobs that require technical knowledge, etc., there's a lot of employers that are going wanting here.
One of the other reports we saw this week had a focus on the service sector. That seems to be starting to boil up and cook in a positive way, right?
Both ISM numbers, the manufacturing was a little bit weaker. Services, roughly 2/3 of the economy. Both of those numbers have been well above 50, which is kind of the magic number. As long as it's above 50, things are going well. And they've been above 50 now for the last year or so. So, again, the economy continues to move along. We expect GDP growth after being very weak the first quarter to pick up, get closer to 2%, but nowhere near the 3% that certainly the administration's looking at right now.
I think the ISM number was at 57. Was that what it was?
Yeah, about 50. Yeah, 57, I think is right.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Energy shares led declines on Asian stock markets today after oil prices fell to their lowest levels in nearly 6 months on oversupply concerns. That raises the question whether OPEC will decide to limit production when they meet later this month. On Wall Street, major U.S. benchmarks were little changed. The S&P 500 index rose 0.1%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost about 6 points. The Nasdaq Composite added about 3 points. Investors turned their attention to April's jobs report. The Labor Department releases non-farm payrolls this morning. Economists are predicting 190,000 new jobs for the month after just 98,000 were gained in March. China's aviation ambitions took flight today with the country's first domestically built passenger jet making its maiden flight. Beijing hopes to challenge Boeing and Airbus. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program, 522. We're here with Paul Nolte, as we are every Friday. Paul's a senior portfolio manager at Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, let's talk a little bit about oil and energy. Oil, lots of eyes on oil this week.
Yeah, and matter of fact, they were talking about it here just in the lead-in. The fact that energy prices are down from $52 a barrel down to $45. We're seeing it at the pump. Pump prices are down into the mid-2s around the Chicago area, at least. Some parts of the country even below $2. That plays into the inflation picture. And so when we look at commodities in general, energy is a big component of it. Here in the U.S. especially, we're drilling and we're pumping a lot of oil. And we're looking at OPEC and Russia to continue to hold their line on production and try to keep that down to keep oil prices up. But it's a concern coming into the inflation picture, and that's the second part of the Fed mandate that we were talking about before. First is employment. That looks pretty good. The second is inflation, and inflation is just now getting to their targets. And if energy prices continue to weaken, those numbers can come down some.
You mentioned OPEC in there. How big of a role do they have in making sure all of this goes the right direction? Are they doing a good job with it?
That's always been kind of the running joke, is we're going to make the here's our targets for production, and then tomorrow we start cheating. So they are still one of the largest producers. But what's interesting now is the United States has really taken a role with the way we drill for oil and the finds that we have. We are becoming no longer energy dependent. We are self-sufficient on energy, and we're actually starting to export some, which we haven't done historically. So OPEC has a role still because it's so easy to get oil there versus the United States. But again, it's a consortium between Russia, United States, and OPEC, whether we want to fix prices at a certain level or not.
Switch gears here to tech companies' earnings this week. We saw the big ones, Apple, Facebook. Any surprises?
If you look below the numbers, maybe a little bit of surprises. There was some disappointment in the iPhone sales with Apple. There was some positive surprises by Facebook, number of users, Google. But when you take a look at the amount of cash that they have generated and cash flow and what they have on the balance sheet, the comment was made earlier in the week with Apple. The amount of cash they have on their balance sheet, they can completely buy out General Electric and not have to just with cash. So that's the stockpile that they have. So the knock on now is, well, what are you going to do with it? They're going to raise their dividend. They're going to buy back some stock. But I think a lot of investors are looking at, well, what's the new whiz-bang thing that you're going to create? Mm-hmm. And there's been that cloud hanging over Cook for a long time of, you're not an innovator in the way that Steve Jobs was.
He did surprise a few people by making this pledge of $1 billion to create manufacturing jobs. Is that a big deal? Or
I think it certainly can be. We're talking such big numbers when it comes to Apple and the amount of product that they sell and the total revenue numbers that they generate and what it costs them to make an iPhone, an iPad, whatever the product is. But I think investors really are looking more for the innovation. You know, they've been known historically as a great innovator, and they've kind of passed that by.
Yeah. Interesting to see if maybe he would make a play for Tesla or one of those other things. I don't see that happening. Certainly Elon Musk, it's news to him as well.
Yeah, it is. You know, when you have that kind of cash sitting around, you can start dreaming big, and a lot of investors do, and not so much in the C-suite.
Yeah, did you see the report this week where, speaking of all this cash these companies have, all of the money that's overseas, what is it, like $1 trillion in corporate cash? That if it comes back, they're just going to give that to shareholders. I saw a couple of people reporting that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that they're trying to roll into the tax legislation is the United States is very unusual in the fact that we tax companies on all of their earnings, no matter where they earn it. Internationally, foreign governments usually just tax on whatever it is that is produced or sold in their country. So as a result, we have a lot of cash overseas because it costs companies in taxes to bring that back. So they're looking to try to reduce that amount to encourage companies to bring that cash back. That's an accounting fallacy, shall we say, because that cash truly is not overseas in a Swiss bank account or wherever else. They use that money, they're borrowing against it here in the United States to buy back stock. So there's things that happen that way. So I discount that some. Yeah. As far as lost cash that's being idle overseas.
Yeah, there's just too much of it to not be able to do positive things.
Exactly.
The other thing is Vive la France, the big election is happening this weekend. If things go normal, it shouldn't be a bump for the markets at all. But then if things don't,
Well, I mean, their polling numbers seem to be a little bit better in the sense that the last election kind of went according to form. So I don't think, and then coming off of the debates the other night, Le Pen did not do all that well. So the polling numbers seem to favor the established candidate that's going to keep things as they are. Mm-hmm. So I don't anticipate much in the way of disruption in the markets. But yes, if Le Pen does win, there will be some upsetting in the markets. But again, I think that is dwindling at the moment.
Will you be having some vin et fromage and watching the results come in?
All the more reason to have a glass of wine on a Sunday evening watching election returns.
Paul, have a great weekend. We'll see you again next Friday.
We'll see you then.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago, Senior Portfolio Manager there. Always with us here on Fridays to talk about the economy and portfolios.
From ABC News Tech Trends, we could soon be looking up when we need a ride. Uber's got some high-flying plans for the future. The company hopes to begin test flights for flying taxis by the year 2020.
Now, by flying taxis, we mean something called vertical takeoff and landing crafts.
In Gadget's Dana Woolman says Uber could launch the program first in Dallas and in Dubai.
Which is interesting because Dubai is also the place where a self-manned human passenger drone is currently being tested. So Dubai does seem to be at the forefront of testing for all sorts of potentially risky and very futuristic seeming flying transportation technologies.
Uber says it's currently exploring new partnerships for creating charging stations for these flying taxis, and it's talking to local real estate companies to find suitable sites for construction of vehicle ports. And the company hopes to offer pricing comparable to its current UberX service. With Tech Trends, I'm Mona Rivera, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 5:40 on this Friday edition of The Opening Bell. And as we do every Friday, we bring in Rick Cini of FairCompare.com to talk about aviation and travel. FairCompare.com is based in Dallas, and Rick is the founder and CEO. Rick, since the last time we talked to you, we had United Airlines CEO on Capitol Hill testifying. There was a big announcement last week about changes United was making. What do you think of what you saw, and should some of these things have happened right after that incident?
Yeah, no, there was a series of events that occurred, all that was completely preventable, and it started off with the overbooking and overselling policy. It starts off with a policy of having crew members having to get to their final destination and when they can get on, actually involuntarily bumping people, the amount of compensation you can ask for. There was a whole litany of things that could have prevented the situation, which now they're trying to correct.
And one of those things is that they offer up to $10,000 for a bump rebook folks. Do you think people will ever get that? But it certainly probably will help, right?
Absolutely. It's funny money to the airlines, too, because they're not giving you cash. They're actually giving you airline credit. That's an empty seat that flies on another flight at some point. So it's not, it does have some value to, but it's not like they're just handing out, nice, crisp $100 bills in stacks.
One of the other parts of this is that they reached a settlement with this passenger, Dr. David Dow. No money put on that. What are you guessing in terms of that settlement?
He won't have to work again a day in his life. It's a smart move. The last thing they want to do is have that entire trial trickle out and cause even more damage into their brand. So, look, I mean, it was a smart move. Get the case closed as quick. Have them sign a non-disclosure. That's what they should have done.
And we've talked before about possible legislation as these CEOs appeared before Congress. It certainly sounds like they were thinking that. Maybe there's going to be legislation coming, too. That would hurt.
Well, that's
right?
Why you're seeing a lot of proactive activity. Right. Well, you know, Steve, every time a senator gets charged a bag fee, we have new legislation to remove bag fees.
Yeah.
So you see these kind of videos. It's easy for a politician to run to a microphone and champion people, and it gets votes. So, and look, I mean, they should be inoculating themselves. They should have done this a long time ago. Overbooking, in my opinion, is something they shouldn't be doing in 2017. It's so 1992.
right, there's so much technology that it seems that it shouldn't be done at all.
It's pretty simple. They get the revenue. Almost all those tickets are non-refundable tickets. I know people don't show up. A few don't here and there. But it's just – and by the way, more aircraft are completely full today, so it's actually more of an issue if you're trying to oversell flights.
Rick, one more last note here on United. I will stop picking on them, but you saw this giant rabbit die. Remind us again about flying with animals in the cargo holds of planes. It's really not a good idea, is it?
Yeah. A lot of air carriers don't actually let you take animals on board or otherwise. A lot of times, if they're in the cargo hold, they can only do certain types, especially dogs in some cases that that have short snouts and stuff like that. They have trouble breathing in some cases. So just generally, it's just not a good idea to, I mean, a lot of the ones that are really small, you can take on the cabin, which is okay. But just think of it this way. How bad is it with babies when you have the pressure changing and what happens to their ears? The same thing happens to your animals when you bring them on board.
So let's talk about something fun here. Five, not necessarily fun, but important. Five things pilots say passengers should never do.
Yeah, no, I thought it would be a good idea to actually ask a few of them and sort of compile a list. And I think it all boils down to a couple different things. Number one is sort of not roaming around the cabin. Nothing good happens when you're roaming around. Now, for people that need to stand up, stretch, make sure their legs are stretched, it's perfectly fine to do that. But it sort of leads into a couple of the other ones, which is leaving your seatbelt on. We saw what would happen. I saw a video just recently on clear air turbulence. It happens all the time. I've been on at least a couple flights where if I hadn't had my seatbelt on, even though the seatbelt sign was off, for people to go to the restroom, I would have hit my head on the ceiling of the aircraft. So it's important that people stay there. The other thing is that the flight attendants are there for a reason. If you're having an issue with another passenger or with a flight attendant for that matter, you're likely to cause something. If the pilot gets involved with it, that plane's going to get diverted if you're in the air. And if so, that means you're going to end up staying the night probably at the airports, in the pokey at the airport.
Part of that, too, is remember that the flight attendants are not there to be waitresses and waiters. They're there to for your security and safety.
I've been on at least two flights where flight attendants have saved people's life that were in cardiac arrest by providing CPR. And I've been on lots of flights, so I'm sort of a large sample, but they're very well trained at what they do. They're trained at diffusing the situation. No sense in getting into it with another passenger because they're kicking your seat from behind or whatever the issue is. Let the flight attendant deal with it.
I saw the video you were talking about, too, of that clear air turbulence. There were people laying in the rows of this airplane, I think, if it's the same one we saw. Just even a little bit of turbulence can send you flying, can't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's the number one occupational hazard for flight attendants is that, and actually bags falling out of the actual overhead bin and hurting them. So the other thing I will mention, too, is that alcohol sometimes does cause issues. That flight attendants do monitor alcohol intake, but they have no idea if somebody spent 4 hours in the bar before they boarded a flight. So, again, those are the top issues. The thing that I took away, Steve, that I thought was kind of interesting was, and which is perfectly fine with me, most of them said they just want to have dinner with their families at night, and I'm perfectly fine with them having dinners with their family at night because that means I got there and I can have it with mine as well.
Right, you're in one piece and landed in one piece. You know, a part of this five things, Rick, is every time we see a movie about somebody on a plane or, you know, a plane is involved, it seems like there are always this idea of opening the door at 30,000 feet. Is that on your list as well?
Yeah, the only person nobody can actually do it because of the air pressure, the difference in the air pressure between the aircraft. Now, I'll note that everybody sends me a note and says D.B. Cooper was able to do that. They were doing that at low altitude when he actually did it. So, basically you cannot open an aircraft door in flight.
Right. It would have to be some sort of explosion or something, and then, well, we don't want that at all.
Absolutely.
All right, Rick, happy travels.
Tasty.
Rick Cini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com in Dallas. You can follow him at Rick Cini on Twitter and at Fair Compare.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Most of the futures, U.S. futures, are flat ahead of the big jobs report later on this morning. Right now, Dow futures off about 15, NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just a fraction. Crude oil is at $45.54 a barrel. Gold and silver both are trading a little bit higher this morning. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson now as we talk a little bit about agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. And yes, it's a lot going on this weekend. I'm going to miss the first Arlington Park Derby party in a couple of decades because I still am not allowed to travel. And it'll probably be another 3 or 4 weeks before the doctors will let me fly. So I'll miss that. I'll miss the Blossom Time Festival over southwestern Michigan. Today, the Grand Floral Parade at 1 o'clock Michigan time, and that will go through downtown Benton Harbor and St. Joe. So there's a lot going on this weekend and a lot of activity if you want to do it. So pick your place, Steve, and you'll find something going on.
Well, will you at least be able to have sort of a mint julep toast tomorrow for the Derby?
I will, yes. I always enjoy. As I said, I grew up on a farm with a team of horses. I didn't like them. They didn't like me. So really the only place I like horses is on a racetrack.
Sure. So, Orion, I saw yesterday Country Companies released its stats in terms of the number of replant claims here in Illinois. Is that because of all of the wet weather that we've had here that the first one didn't take?
Yeah, because if you'd have to go in and replant, which can occur if what you've already planted is under 5-6 inches of standing water, that will only live so long. And so then you have to replant. And every year you have to watch that number. And this year, yeah, it's an unusual year because of the rainfall that we've had across the Midwest. But again, as one corn farmer told me yesterday, that he's not going to get worried yet because generally about the middle of May, if we're running far behind a year ago, then there is concern. And the planted acreage number that we got on Monday was 34% of the nation's corn acres planted. And that was right on the number for the five-year average. So at this point, the varieties of seed corn want you to plant early. The earlier you plant, the more yield you'll probably get. But at this point, not a lot of concern yet about the planting season.
As we hear more and more about what happened this week around NAFTA, it's sounding more like the new Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue and a couple of other top advisors were really the deciding forces here in keeping NAFTA in place, at least for now. Is that what you're hearing, too?
That's what I'm hearing as well. And I tell you, the milk war with Canada just opened the door to other groups to come in and say, wait a minute, because the president's criticism of the Canadian dairy system has now brought other American farm groups to tackle long-standing trade irritants. For example, U.S. poultry exporters, who include Tyson Foods and Pilgrim Pride Corporation, as well as egg sellers, are expected to seek greater access to Canada's tightly controlled market in renegotiations of the North American Free Trade Agreement. The U.S., which is the world's second largest chicken exporter, will demand market access gains at least equal to those they would have realized under the now terminated Trans-Pacific Partnership. So we've got poultry, we've got the grain farmers who say that Canada enjoys an advantage that they don't have. So yes, I think there's going to be quite a bit of renegotiation. I'm not sure which direction it will take. But I tell you what, I like what Sonny Perdue is doing early in his tenure as the Secretary of Agriculture. He met with the FFA members, the Farmers of Tomorrow, and he met with the leadership in Congress on agriculture. And he has already made some changes in the school lunch law. And he's not standing still or sitting down very much. He's getting things done.
The other good story I saw this week that we'll close out here with, Orion, the University of Tennessee ag folks there did a study of bees and found that despite all of the bad press that pesticides are getting for perhaps impacting bees, the opposite is true, that where there is agriculture, there are thriving colonies of bees. That's good news.
It is, and initially, you're right, we thought it was the insecticides that were used to control pests in cornfields and so on that created all the problem, But it seems to be this colony disorder where the bees are not able to maintain their colonies the way they should. And the other thing that we forget, we truck bees all over the country this time of the year. Farmers rent bees so they can get almond trees pollinated, so you can get everything else pollinated. And that little bee has a big impact on what you and I have available to eat in this country. So I think we're making progress.
All right. Ori and Samuelson, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. It's 5:57 now here on the opening bell on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk for this Friday. It's May 5th, Cinco de Mayo. The Labor Department will release its employment data for April today, the big jobs report. After a hiring slowdown in March, the U.S. job market is thought to have resumed solid growth in April, a trend that could be underpinning of economic growth. After a weak start to the year, also today, the Federal Reserve will release consumer credit data for March. Fannie Mae will report quarterly results before the market opens. Cigna, Scripps, and U.S. Cellular have earnings releases after the bell. Tomorrow, Berkshire Hathaway annual shareholder meeting. Some of the things that could move the markets today on this Friday, May 5th.